From WGCU, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. One in five young people suffers from a mental illness, struggling daily from anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder, or any number of other disorders in brain function. When seeking help in Southwest Florida, many parents are having difficulty finding care for their kids, and kids themselves have a hard time knowing where to turn. Today, we're talking with parents who, after helping their own daughter, made it their mission to shine a light on the need for more local resources. Plus, 2017 is going to be the big year for one Naples bird watcher. Her goal, to see more than 700 species of birds by the end of the year. We'll talk with her about her journey, and we'll talk with one of the presenters at an upcoming birding seminar in Fort Myers about migratory patterns of not only the birds, but the people who watch them. First, the news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. There are about 230,000 children under the age of 18 living in Southwest Florida. According to Golisano Children's Hospital, about 46,000 of them are currently dealing with a seriously debilitating mental disorder. Not only are they struggling to cope, but their families are looking for help, and only a few are finding it. According to the Lee Health Foundation, providing services and financial support for these families has not been a top priority for the state of Florida, nor for the Southwest Florida region. But this is where Scott Spiesel and Susan Goldie come in. They've made it their personal project to help raise money to make a pediatric health initiative at Golisano Children's Hospital in Southwest Florida a fully funded reality. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Also here to talk with us is about what is available when it comes to pediatric mental health in Southwest Florida is Lee Health's Chief Foundation Officer Skip Leonard. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here. Thanks.
We are talking about mental health care for children in Southwest Florida. Have you had difficulty finding the help you or your children need? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we are at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Scott Spiesel, tell me how you came to recognize that there's a need for more access to mental health care for young people in Southwest Florida.
Well, Susan and I have been involved in mental health care through my daughter, who is bipolar and was suicidal as a early childhood. We moved to Southwest Florida 4 years ago and were interested in getting involved and went up to see Golisano Hospital. We had a tour from Dr. Solomon and saw the beautiful new hospital that will open up the 1st of April. And we were discussing what the needs were, and Dr. Solomon brought up that the greatest need that the hospital has right now is to begin a mental health department. At that point, Susan and I, knowing how vital it was in saving my daughter, because I'm very confident without Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, my daughter wouldn't be with us today. And she's thriving now, getting a master's in psychology. We decided that we needed to do something, and it meant getting involved both philanthropically and getting a committee started to start Kids Minds Matter, which is the initiative to get a mental health program started at Golisano Children's Hospital.
So the impetus for you getting involved in trying to do something here came from your own home and your family and what your daughter went through.
Absolutely.
Now, when you think about teenagers and mental health, Susan Goldie, teenagers are notoriously moody, and they're kind of hard for adults to relate to, no matter how hard we try. But I want to know, I mean, how did you and Scott recognize that there was something more than just the usual moodiness happening?
We had observed our child and children. I used to teach elementary school, and so I would see it in the kids there as well. A child who doesn't have a lot of friends in school or outside of school, or an interest in relating to other kids in the neighborhood or in the classroom, withdrawal from the family, unwillingness to talk about anything, going to the child's bedroom and closing the door immediately after dinner and not coming out until the morning, or really erratic behaviors. You can start to see, and with our daughter, we saw some extremes in behavior, either very manic, very energetic episodes, followed by fairly long depression and suicidal issues where she would at least talk about it. And so one of the things we've looked for is just seeing a behavior that seems to be more extreme than we might remember when we were that age.
Yeah. And did everything kind of change all at once? Or did it kind of gradually occur? How old was she?
She will say that she was in sixth grade. My memories are seventh and eighth grade, where her behavior would be very erratic. She'd come down one morning and say, I decided what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. I'm going to paint on stage with a paintbrush in my foot, and this is how I'm going to do it. And just so euphoric and energetic, and 2 days later, she didn't want to come out of her room again. And, you know, and recognize that bipolar is only one of
dozens. One of many.
Yeah. And at that point, she would start to confide in me that she felt that she was going to hurt herself, and could I sleep on the floor in her bedroom? And at that point, we were getting services from local psychologist and then ultimately a psychiatrist, only to find out that he was an adult psychiatrist and actually prescribed a medication for her that was created a manic situation in school, where she ended up being suspended, put into a separate school. And it wasn't until we got to Children's Hospital of Philadelphia that we had a pediatric psychiatrist who said, whoa, did she have a manic episode after taking this drug? And we said, how did you know? She goes, yeah. The pharmaceutical compounds and how they react with developing minds are very, very different than adults. And
that had to be so alarming that she asked you to stay in the room with her because she was nervous about her, what she was going to do.
Oh, you know, and as a parent, I kept thinking, what am I doing wrong? What aren't we providing? Are we being too strict? Not strict enough? You just don't know. And unfortunately, because of, you know, privacy, you can't get recommendations. You can't call somebody up and say, hey, have you used this psychologist or psychiatrist, and are they good? And only through 6 months where you say, wait a minute.
It's different from an orthopedist. You fix right. The knee and the knee is fixed.
And people walk around saying,
my knee is great because of this guy.
Nobody wants to talk about their child with a mental illness. Right. And that's, as Susan and I have been speaking throughout the communities, and, you know, we've been speaking from Naples up through Fort Myers and all kinds of different gated communities. After we're done speaking and telling the whole story, people inevitably come up and hug me and cry that they've lost a child to suicide, or they've had issues with drug addiction, and you name it, the whole spectrum of mental illnesses.
And suicide is the second leading cause of death among teenagers, from what the statistics say. So, and that's
right. And I would say that when you have a room full of people, and we've seen it personally, and you talk about it, inevitably somebody either has had a child or very close to somebody who's had a child who's committed suicide. There's about 6,000 children from 10 to 24 who have commit suicide successfully a year, unfortunately.
Well, and as you learned, there's quite the learning curve. When anybody's diagnosed with anything, you said someone that's a loved one, you learn everything you can about that. So you learn pretty quickly the difference between young people and the drugs that are used to help mental illness and adults. Tell me a little bit about that kind of discovery.
The psychology of it as well ends up being a factor. Having a professional who understands how to deal with children and adolescents as opposed to adults has made a huge difference for our daughter. In terms of medication, it's a long road to figuring out what the right mix is for a particular child, and having the sensitivity by a psychiatrist who specializes in pediatrics really helps you find the way to the right mix that enables the child to still be functional and participate in school and to have a social life, but also be able to become stabilized.
And you said the developing brain is also different in a teenager than an adult.
Yeah. The other thing that I just want to point out is we have a second daughter who, because so much attention was paid to the daughter who is bipolar, she developed anxieties without us knowing because she was always trying to take care of the family unit. So, and we see this throughout as people discuss their personal situations. It becomes treating the family. It's not just the child because, as you can imagine, if your child's hospitalized for anything, the entire family is affected, and certainly when it's the dirty disease of mental illness. And unfortunately, it's still viewed that way. The whole family, you know.
It seems like there aren't enough times that you can express to people that it's not something to be ashamed of. It's very hard to get people over that hurdle.
Statistically, 1 in 5 people will have a diagnosable mental illness in their lifetime. Now, is it ADHD or autism or depression? And there's an epidemic in our society going on. You may want to touch on children.
The children that we're talking about and we want to help in our community are the first post 9/11 generation. And Time magazine recently had an article, the CDC has come out with statistics that these children have never lived in a world where they're safe. And so the anxiety of their physical safety and emotional safety with cyberbullying and some of the other things that come along with being an internet generation have really changed the dynamic for the kids in our area. So while 1 in 5 people in their lifetime will have a mental health issue, a huge number of those will be children. We know just in our local area, based on national statistics, 36,000 children in Southwest Florida just in 2017 will have a diagnosable mental health illness where they could benefit from having pediatric mental health care.
We are talking about mental health care for young people in Southwest Florida with our guests Scott Spiesel and Susan Goldie, who are working with Lee Health Foundation to set up a mental health component within the Golisano Children's Hospital of Southwest Florida. You can become part of the conversation by giving us a call at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK, or you can find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. And when it comes to getting help for young people, it requires specialized care, as we were just hearing, with somebody that works with specifically children, pediatrics. And that's different from what adults may need. And that's why Skip Leonard with the Lee Health Foundation is here to talk a little bit about what's currently available for young people needing mental health care in Southwest Florida and what's needed.
You know, there's so many issues that surround especially pediatric behavioral health. I think one of our real focuses at Lee Health is really to do what Susan and Scott are doing to at the very beginning and to really move behavioral health and pediatrics up to the next level. You know, right now Lee Health has several programs dealing with behavioral health throughout its system. But it's just a start. The community deals with behavioral health, both inpatient and outpatient services. We have wonderful partners who do great work in that behalf. We don't have enough beds. We don't have enough psychologists. We don't have enough psychiatrists. We all know the issues and the challenges of reimbursement and lack of support through reimbursement for these type of issues. But for us, it's really early intervention. So one of the goals of Kids Minds Matter is to create philanthropic and other opportunities for sustainable revenue so we can interact with pediatrics at a very early age when we sense something isn't quite right. And the best ones to do that are through our pediatric primary care unit. So one of our goals is to begin to look at having embedded psychologists and professionals, behavioral health specialists, embedded within those primary practices, those pediatric primary practices, because we know if we get to them early enough, we have a great chance. You know, our challenge as a society, and we see it in our emergency rooms, we see it in our jails, we see it throughout, is that too often when we get to them, it's too late. And so our goal is to really make sure that very early on we're able to diagnose some of these things. And these just aren't things of suicide and drug abuse and eating disorders. Those are very important issues within this community we need to address. But we're also talking about autism and Asperger's and some of the other diseases that come along very early on. And we're beginning to talk about that very early intervention, which will have great impact, positive impact, as they become adults. So we're really focused on making sure we get there early enough and being able to have diagnosis early enough.
So are you going to be working with existing pediatricians, which are already within Lee Health?
Both within Lee Health, whoever has those interactions with our children. Golisano Children's Hospital is a full-service children's hospital. We deal with all issues, and behavioral health needs to be one of the kind of the stamp stones of Golisano, and that's really what we're just starting to do. And there's no question it is going to take energy and the energy that Susan and Scott and others bring along, but it will take philanthropy. We know the challenges, the financial challenges of behavioral health in this community, and this is why Kids Minds Matter and other philanthropic opportunities will create a real sustainable funding source for behavioral health.
Well, I think a lot of times it becomes for people and parents perhaps something that's a bit of a back burner issue, maybe because, you know, if you can't walk because your knee's broken, you fix that pretty quick. But you kind of – seems like some people are tempted to kind of limp along with mental health issues and problems, and that could be passed along from parents to kids.
You know, I was down at David Lawrence Center about three or four months ago, just talking to the folks down there, and it really hit me that when a person goes into the emergency room, something, you know, leg is broken, as you brought up, they're fixed, they move on, life moves on. But in behavioral health issues, these are lifelong conditions in many instances that just doesn't take a one visit. It takes a years of visit and years of interaction. That's very, very consuming, costly, and it takes a lot of folks to make that work really well, and that's what we're trying to do.
Yes. Sorry,
Susan. And one of the issues, going back to something that Scott said earlier, with behavioral health, it affects the whole family. So the longer the family puts off addressing it, the more impact it has on parents and other children or others living in the household. It makes it much harder for the household to work in a very positive way. So by catching it early and being willing to address it early gives the child a much better chance of having a happier, successful life, but also changes for the better the lives of the parents and others living in the household.
In addition, just playing off of the broken leg, you go in, you know, there's X number of drugs for pain and what have you, and they're pretty tried and true. With mental health, the pharmacology is so different, and there's so much that's not known. Every psychiatrist, whether pediatric or adult, will tell you that it's trial and error. What's going to work? A little bit of this and a little bit – and they actually have combinations, and we don't know enough because there's not a blood test to say mental illness, check, okay.
Wouldn't that be convenient?
It would be wonderful, but we don't have that.
Do we need more pediatric psychiatrists and psychologists in our area?
No question. No question.
And do you think maybe creating this type of culture, this type of initiative within Golisano Children's Hospital, do you think that's going to be able to attract some of these people?
Oh, absolutely. I think that is one of our main focus, is to not only discuss and bring discourse to the issue, but to bring folks who want to come in and support this issue and bring in psychiatrists and psychologists into this area is absolutely essential. I think anybody will tell you that if you have a child dealing with this, try to get in to see one. It's just very, very difficult to do, and that's something we're going to be focused on.
I've heard that it's really tough to get in.
Yeah. We've met with a number of the psychology groups in the area. Dr. Katz is one of them, and they're booked all the time. But recognize that of the 36,000 kids that might use that, about 12,000 of them have insurance or can afford to pay. 24,000 of those kids that have a mental illness are either on Medicaid or uninsured. So they have, even if we have at this point the number of psychiatrists and psychologists available to treat them, without an initiative and philanthropy, you're not going to be able to help those kids.
To help those families cover those bills, the ones that don't have the insurance.
Yes.
We do have a call coming in from John in Fort Myers. John, what would you like to ask?
A grandma is bipolar. What I wonder is the child, if the child has absolutely shown no signs of being bipolar, but in 23, 24, 25, and her records are closed because she's an adult, is it possible she would have no symptoms of bipolar when she's young, and then when she's kids 23, 24, 25, she starts exhibiting bipolar?
Yeah, I don't know. We don't have an actual psychiatrist or psychologist here.
And again, I'm not a medical expert, but I will tell you just from my experiences that that's very possible, because as the brain develops, things change. And my recommendation would be try to get them help.
Yeah, try to get them evaluated and get them help. And I've heard of people developing mental illnesses much later in life too.
Absolutely.
And I don't know if there are situational things that can trigger stuff as well, life changes, whatever. And I know that there are situational depression that can certainly have a huge impact. So, Skip, I wanted to ask you, what do you want for this part of Golisano Children's Hospital to be able to do eventually?
So I think as we look at it today, we're just looking to create the awareness, to create the conversation about pediatric behavioral health. And with the opening of the Golisano Children's Hospital, I think we have an opportunity to really be part of this excitement of what a full-service children's hospital looks like. So today, we're really starting the conversation as to where we take this. The next piece of this is what Scott and Susan are doing with Kids Minds Matter event. They are out there. Our hope is to raise at least $1 million in this one event to support current programs at Lee Health, but also to begin a conversation about what an expanded pediatric behavioral health program looks like, including some physicalness to it, that is buildings or areas or whatever. But we have to create that conversation, because right now it's in bits and pieces and we need to bring it together. I think the second piece of this is that we recognize we have tremendous community partners throughout this whole region, not just in Lee and Collier, but throughout, who are doing incredible work in behavioral health. They've been doing it for years, been doing it very well considering all the challenges that are on them. You know, our goal is to work with those community partners to come up with a community strategic plan to understand how we as a community can address this issue. Lee Health itself cannot address this issue solely and singly and in a vacuum. It will take those wonderful community partners that we all know about, that we all hear about. And for Lee Health to be in that conversation, to me, just makes a lot of sense. I think in the end, we are looking for some type of focused program, whether it's outpatient program, which is kind of where we're focused now, but that may change, but really a focused program that deals with the 5, 6, 7 major issues of pediatric behavioral health. We cannot be everything to everybody. We recognize that. But what are the things that are most important to this community and our kids in this community when dealing with behavioral health? That's a conversation that we're just starting now and beginning to understand. Because as I said before, you can go into any emergency room, you can go into any jail, any prison, and you will see the results of behavioral health not being addressed early on. Agreed, there are times where you can't address it early on, but most of the time, if we get early intervention, we're in such a better position later on in life.
Well, and it sounds like the frontline plan of existing pediatricians within your system being trained to look out for and test for some of these issues early on with kids.
Absolutely. And we do some of that right now. We have a REACH program, Dr. Salmon and Golisano folks that are working with to begin that process. But it will take significant investment, not just from Lee Health, but from the community. And that's where we're starting to. Kids Minds Matters is one of the more significant investments. Our Wine Fest, actually a piece of the Wine Fest this year, the Southwest Wine Fest here in Lee, will focus on behavioral health. Part of the gift to give will be a behavioral health focus. That could potentially be $1 million to $1.5 million during that period of time. So we're not even promoting it at this point, and yet we're seeing such significant excitement and philanthropy that's following. We're just at the start of something incredibly exciting.
And that could be because, as Scott mentioned earlier, at every time you speak to anybody, somebody has been touched and affected by a child who has had a mental illness.
It's interesting. We wanted to get involved, and I jokingly say we decided to get involved like having a meal. What we ended up getting served was an elephant. And every time we turn around, we're being asked to go speak to another group.
I know you mentioned to me on the phone that you thought you'd just kind of do this, and then it's become basically your full-time job.
Yeah.
That's like all you do.
That's all we do.
Well, you know, and the old adage is, as Scott mentioned, you know, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time, and how do you deal with this issue? And it needs to be one piece at a time as we come together.
And we know how important it is. Yes, the pediatricians are getting training and can raise awareness that there may be an issue with the child. What we want to ensure is that there's somebody there to follow up. And once you have a diagnosis, to be able to treat the child, whether it's a psychologist who can spend time working with the child and their family, or whether they need a psychiatrist, but at least to be sure that we have the diagnosis.
Yeah. Obviously, the person who's been diagnosed with mental illness is the one who is suffering. But for parents and the family surrounding that child, it's got to be hard too, especially when it's hard to find help. Can you tell me about how this diagnosis affected your family? You mentioned that the younger sister was affected, but how did it affect you?
Well, it changed the family dynamics. And once we got my daughter and stabilized, unfortunately, she was struck by a car and was in a coma and had 9 crushed bones. So it was touch and go for her life.
And
that was at a young age, and it led to the initial family breaking up. Susan and I, it's a second marriage, blissful, I must add.
But it makes it very hard. It's a lot of stress. There's financial stress, and then there's also the mental and emotional stress.
It takes about $2,500 to treat one child. That's an average, a baseline. So if you start to look at how much it would cost to treat 24,000 kids, it's a pretty astounding number.
Yeah, you're getting and then you always want to protect your kids, and you not only want to protect them from what's harming them, and you're trying to make everything better for them, but then you also want to protect them from what other people are saying or thinking about their mental illness.
Yes, and you find that the other children in the household also end up having to deal with that, and comments from other kids about having a sibling who is struggling.
Yeah, kids can be tough.
They can be really tough.
Yeah.
You know, I have two teenagers. I have a 13 and a 16-year-old, and it is remarkable to me how the issue of cyberbullying, how the issue of stress in their lives and all those issues which we as children perhaps had but didn't recognize or didn't realize and probably wasn't even as acute, how important that is to their mental well-being and mental development. And it doesn't matter your socioeconomic condition, where you live, all that. It really does matter to parents as they watch their children develop to recognize whatever it is and to get in early and get it taken care of as best we can.
And people say a lot out loud that mental health shouldn't be stigmatized. Medical professionals have determined that mental illness is a physiological disorder in brain function. And the Teen Mental Health Organization even leads its website with the words, "Having mental illness is not a choice or a moral failing, nor is it a parental failing." Do you think people are starting to get that?
Starting. But until the conversation has started, our committee that was put together, again, we were the new kids on the block, 4 years old, the hospital knew some people and put it together. We have a very strong committee that is creating this. There were two members of the committee that had never spoken until we spoke about our personal situation, about their personal situation. So it takes that initiative that people feel safe, that you've exposed yourself and the pain that you've gone through as a parent, to be willing to open up.
It's tough to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. So tell me what's next for the Kids Minds Matter Foundation.
We're having an inaugural event on March 7th at Shangri-La in Old Bonita Springs. And our goal, as we've said, is to raise $1 million so that the Golisano Children's Hospital can start putting the feet on this foundation for how we do a really strong community outreach. There is also a website through the Lee Foundation website where donations can be made and information will be provided, as people have questions about what we're doing.
I found that, and I have a link to that on our website, which is wgcunews.org. So if you're interested in helping with that, then that link is there, and learning more about what the programs are that they are planning and events that are coming up. So that's where people can find that information. We also have information there about where to call and who to talk to if you have questions regarding mental illness within your family or with your children. I want to thank you for coming in today and also sharing your story, Scott and Susan. It was great to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Also, I want to thank for being here Skip Leonard, who has the job of being the Chief Foundation Officer with Lee Health. I really appreciate your time. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
Coming up, extreme competitive birding. It is a thing. People take a year and travel all over North America trying to see more birds throughout the continent than any other birders. We'll talk with a Naples woman who's on that bird quest called The Big Year next.